balance, Nick ripped the gun out of his hand and aimed it at Tyree. He fired it, screaming. Tyree ran for the parking lot. Nick would have pursued him, but Alan punched at him and tried to get the gun back. In that instant, Nick felt his powers surge forward with an audible rush that filled his ears with a fierce, drumming beat. The smell and taste of blood permeated everything. Kiddust, kiddosa, kiddent. Conceived in violence to do violence and to die violently. That was the promise written in the first language that wrapped around Nick's Malachi symbol. It was the code of his breed. Alan's hatred and propensity to hurt others fed the Malachi inside Nick, making him all the stronger. It was why Nick's father chose to live in prison when there was no human power in existence that could hold a Darian. Hatred, prejudice, jealousy, all the negative emotions around a Malachi were like handing a can of supercharged spinach to Popeye. The more violence that was directed near them or to them, the more power and strength they could draw from it. Heat engulfed Nick's hands, burning both him and Alan. With a fierce cry of rage, Nick caught Alan a hard punch to the jaw that sent him straight to the ground. Nick fell on top of him, raining fiery blow after blow on Alan's body as he sought to make some kind of peace with the past where Alan had intended to kill him. Over and over, he saw that fateful night in his mind when he'd been a scared 14-year-old boy. And the three of them had stomped, beat, and shot him while he tried only to protect himself from their unwarranted brutality. And for what? For refusing to traumatize and rob an elderly couple whose only mistake was walking down the wrong street at the wrong time? Scum like them needed to die. Alan and his crew were a disease on this earth, and it was time to cure it.
"Kill him, Nick," Casey shouted. "Kill him. It's what he deserves."
The smell of blood thickened in his nostrils as Alan begged for a mercy he hadn't shown Nick. Meanwhile, Casey continued to scream for him to end Alan's life until their two voices mingled like some kind of macabre duet. Inside his mind, he heard his Malachi demonic voice laughing, saw his skin starting to mottle with its true black and red tone. 1,000 sounds assaulted him, but one voice rang out loudest. "We sleep soundly in our beds because rough men stand ready in the night to visit violence on those who would do us harm." Winston Churchill. Kieran quoted that so much that it perpetually rang in Nick's ears. It was so common a mantra for the Dark Hunters that many of them used it as the tagline in their emails or had it tattooed on their bodies. It was second only to the Spartan motto, Eton Epitas, return with your shield or upon it, i.e. victory or death. And Alan definitely deserved to die for all his sins against this world, all his crimes against the innocent people he'd victimized. Nick had promised himself retribution for his own gunshot should they ever meet again. Fate had brought Alan back into his reach. Who was he to argue with what was obviously a God-given gift? "I have to keep my word." Gauchers were known by the oaths. It was the one thing his mother had drilled into him. You never break a promise, especially when it's to yourself. He held the gun to Alan's temple, and in his mind, he saw a clear image of Alan standing over him while Nick lay beaten and helpless on the street. Saw the eager gleam in Alan's eyes as he looked forward to blowing Nick's head off. "Say your prayers, Gaucher." Those had been his words to Nick. "You're about to become a statistic." The coldness of Alan's actions that night spurred Nick as he pulled the hammer back with his thumb to cock the gun. He tightened his grip on the trigger. Just as he was about to do it, his brain kicked up a voice that drowned out both Alan and Casey. Cody's. "Every person is born with feelings of envy and hate. If he gives way to them, they will lead him to do violence and crime, and any sense of loyalty and good faith will be abandoned. Then he is forever lost. He is forever damned. Not by the world or the circumstances of his birth, but by his own free will." All of a sudden, his vision cleared. And it felt like he slammed back into his body. Hyper aware now, he saw the bloody mess he'd made of Alan, the horrific sight
sickened him. He barely recognized Alan's features. Blood was spattered all over both of them. The new clothes he'd been so proud of were now ruined. How could I have done that to another human being? He wasn't an animal.
No, you're worse. You're the Malachi.
Please, Alan begged through his swollen, bleeding lips. Don't kill me. Releasing him, Nick stumbled back. What are you doing? Casey demanded as she closed the distance between them. He was going to rob you and rape me. He's an animal. Kill him before he harms someone else. You owe it to the world to make it safe and end his life. At her incessant nagging, his rage started rising once more. Everything faded until he was again focused only on making Alan suffer.
I'm going Malachi. And there was nothing he could do to stop it.
Chapter 11. Caleb looked up from the Sumerian text he was reading as a chill rushed over his skin. It was an ancient stirring in the ether that he hadn't felt in centuries, and it was one that made his hackles rise and his molten blood run cold. Somehow, Nick was quickly pulling his father's powers into his body. This was not good. Nick wasn't used to the power he had, never mind the greater power of a full Malachi.
What have you done, kid?
He rose and started to go after Nick, but before he could, he felt another deep, undeniable ripple. A Darian, summoning him to his side. As a Darian's personal slave, Caleb had no choice except to do as he was told. And there was no missing the franticness of this summoning. Adarian was panicked.
Maybe he's finally dying.
A bolt of white-hot hope shot through him. He'd been praying for Adarian's death for so long that he couldn't remember the last free breath he'd enjoyed.
Die already, you worthless POS.
Transforming into his raven form, Caleb flew out of the open upstairs window and headed upstate for Angola Prison, where Nick's father hid in plain sight among some of the most dangerous criminals in the country. It was the one place where Adarian could keep his powers fully charged without even trying. The one place his enemies would never dream of seeking him. After all, who would voluntarily incarcerate himself after he'd broken free of the hellish, otherworld prison Adarian had spent most of his life in? Obvious answer? The Malachi. But other creatures didn't think like them. The Malachi breed was a special kind of twisted that defied most brains and moral codes. Reaching the famed prison, Caleb flew to the window where Adarian's solitary cell was, but the elder Malachi wasn't there. Caleb cocked his head. It was too late for Adarian to have one of his yard breaks. Since he was on death row, for one of the most heinous killing sprees in Louisiana history, he was supposed to be kept in his cell 23 hours a day.
He's finally dead.
For one half heartbeat, Caleb rejoiced until he realized that he was still being summoned by his master.
Crap, it lives.
Disgusted with his luck, Caleb followed the sensation until he reached the R.E. Barrow Jr. Treatment Center, where inmates went for medical care. Returning to his human form, he flashed himself into the building and stayed invisible as he searched for his master. He knew he'd found Adarian when he came to the most secured room in the facility, something that was really laughable since Adarian could get in and out of the building as easily as Caleb did. Without slowing, he walked through the guarded door and into the sparsely furnished room where Adarian was strapped down by all fours to the hospital bed. Yeah, right. That would really stop Adarian if he wanted to kill someone. But that being said, Adarian looked awful. The elder Malachi was pale and gaunt in appearance. Weak. Caleb had never seen him like this. Adarian even had a bandage over his head, and dark, deep bruises covered his exposed skin. Yet that wasn't what stunned Caleb the most. It was the color of the blood that seeped through Adarian's gauze dressing. Dark red. That could mean only one thing.
Are you dying?
Adarian curled his lip at Caleb's stupid and obvious question.
Take the joy from your tone, slave. I'm not dead yet, and I still have enough power to end your pathetic existence.
But the death rattle in his chest mocked that threat. Caleb moved closer to the bed to examine the numerous wounds marring Adarian's body. What happened? His breathing labored, he licked his dry, cracked lips.
Riot. At first it strengthened me, then...
He lifted his strapped hand to show his bleeding skin.
What is going on, Malphus? I should not be weakening while the humans are fighting each other here. I should be growing stronger than ever. How can this be?
Caleb had no idea why Adarian would be losing power like this. In the past, it had always been simple. The elder retained his full strength until the younger Malachi came into his own. Then the younger would confront his father and drain him. Once the elder was weak enough, the younger killed him and assumed his rightful place as the sole Malachi. A perfect blood exchange and inheritance. Well, not perfect if you were the Malachi who died. But Nick hadn't been near his father since Adarian had gone to Nick's hospital room and tried to kill him first and absorb Nick's fledgling powers before Nick learned how to kill him.
Was it a demon that attacked you?
Caleb asked, thinking it was one of the many predators pursuing Adarian who'd landed a lucky shot on the beast.
Human, of all disgusting things. I was wounded by a mere mortal.
He had a right to be indignant. Caleb would be highly offended, too, had a lowly human reduced him to Adarian's current state.
Adarian's jaw quivered. Find whatever has done this to me and kill it.
And if it's Nick?
Bring him here, so I can kill him myself.
Ah, paternal love. How he loathed it. Like Nick, he'd never known what it was like to have a real father. His father had plotted against him and used him just like Adarian had done with Nick. But one point in his father's favor, the bastard hadn't tried to kill him. Yet.
I'm running out of time, Malphus. Do not betray me in this. Know that if something kills me, you will not be freed.
Caleb scoffed. That's not the way it works. Adarian laughed cruelly.
It is when you bargain for it.
He glared smugly at Caleb.
I know your ilk, and I know you wouldn't lift a finger to save me unless your own ass was on the line, too. So I have tied your geist to mine. Whoever takes my powers takes your servitude with them. Forever.
Caleb cursed as that cold, brutal reality racked him. Only the Malachi had the ability to bond demon geists. It wasn't easy, but...
I have no way to gain my freedom? Ever?
He snarled at Adarian.
You can only control who holds your leash.
Well, wasn't this all hunky-dory? Just what he wanted to hear. It ranked right up there with, sorry you were accidentally turned into a eunuch while you slept. In that one moment, he wanted to kill Adarian more than he ever had before. But the laws of his people would drain his own powers and kill him if he even attempted it. And if he died in bondage, his geist would be trapped in a grisly nether realm where he would never have any kind of peace or rest whatsoever. Eternal hell that made mockery of the one mortals feared. Impotent rage clouded his vision.
I hate you.
Adarian closed his eyes as if he savored those words. And why shouldn't he? Caleb's hatred only fueled Adarian's power and made him stronger. After a second, he opened his eyes to glare at him.
Go, Malphus. Find my attacker.
As you will, my burning external hemorrhoid. Caleb withdrew as fast as he could before his hatred fed Adarian more. He didn't want to do anything for the beast he didn't have to. How did I become this pathetic a wretch? His fury and grief mixed inside him as he remembered the fierce, undefeated demon he used to be. Gods, how he despised his memories. All they did was show him the mistakes he'd made, the faces of the past that haunted him to the point he could no longer sleep through any given night. Before he could stop himself, he manifested his most prized possession into his palm, an ancient gold locket. It contained a single precious lock of white blonde hair that he hadn't seen in centuries. He was too afraid to open the locket and chance losing his last link to the only thing that he'd ever deemed valuable. Tears welled in his eyes as he ran his finger over the engraving on the outside that was written in his native language. Teria Asim. Forever yours. In his mind, he saw the most perfect human woman who had ever been born. Gentle and kind, she had turned him from an instrument of absolute destruction into a noble hero who had been willing to risk everything to save her race and protect them all, no matter the personal cost. When every living creature had been out to take his life and had driven him mad with his need to survive and conquer them, she had tamed him with her tenderest touch. She had never once seen him as a rabid monster to be destroyed or enslaved. While others had feared and cursed him, she had reached out and offered him innocent friendship. In all the centuries he'd existed, she alone had loved him. And the agony of her loss was every bit as profound and cutting now as it had been the moment she'd drawn her last breath in his arms. I would give anything to have one more moment with you, to smell the sunshine on your skin, hear my name on your precious lips. I miss you so much, Liliana, he breathed, his voice breaking with the weight of his pain. He had lived solely for her beautiful smile, and she had died protecting his worthless life. The injustice of it was enough to drive him insane, but the gods wouldn't allow him even the comfort of madness to escape this hell he was trapped in, and he was no longer the creature who had loved her to distraction. She had taken his nobility and love with her into eternity and left him forever bereft and aching for her. I am sorrow. My name is hatred, disease, wrath. A single tear slid down his cheek. Infuriated by that weakness, he wiped it away so hard that he bruised his skin. The searing pain brought him back to the present and to the task Adarian had given him. The elder Malachi was about to die, and since Caleb didn't know what was killing him, he had no idea who his next master would be. But the one thing he could guarantee, who or whatever was coming for Adarian wouldn't hesitate to use and abuse both Caleb's physical being and his powers. And as bad as Adarian was, for the most part, he had left Caleb alone. His next master might not be so neglectful. A tick started in his jaw. Slavery sucked for anyone, but for demons it was so much worse. If their masters wanted to torture them, they couldn't even die and escape it. And most everything that knew how to enslave demon kin possessed a cruel streak that made the Marquis de Sade look like a Buddhist monk flower child. Grinding his teeth, he used his powers to return Liliana's locket to his room where it would be safe from harm or loss. His hand turned cold immediately from the sudden emptiness, and the hole in his heart ached all the more. When he'd looked into her kind blue eyes, he'd seen a future with her by his side forever. Instead of an eternity of happiness and love, he'd only been granted 3 precious years with her, or more precisely, 1,204 days, a mere blip on eternity. Closing his eyes, he tried to forget that her life had been the only thing he had ever begged for. But even now, he could see himself covered with her blood as he screamed out for his father to help him, for someone, anyone he'd served, to breathe life back into the only person who had ever made him feel whole, needed, loved. His precious Liliana had lived, and she had perished by her convictions. Damned is the soul that dies while the evil it committed lives on. And the most damned of all are those who see the evil coming for others and refuse to confront it. For it is not out of fear that heroes are born, but rather out of their selfless love that will not allow them safety bought from the torture, death, and degradation of others. It is better to die in defense of another than to live with the knowledge that you could have saved them but chose to do nothing. And to those who think that one person cannot make a difference, I say this.
The deadliest tidal wave begins as an unseen ripple in a vast ocean. Live your life so that your integrity will motivate others to strive for excellence long after you've passed on. And know that no good deed or sacrifice or offer of sincere friendship or love is ever forgotten by the one who receives it. Liliana's words haunted him. She had taught him that it was far better to be alone than to be surrounded by people who were morally bankrupt, people who sought to bring him down with jealous words and barbs they couched in humor, thinking he was too stupid to recognize the insults they thought they'd so cleverly hidden. He'd given up his lead role as a fierce, conquering warlord to live in a tiny hut where Liliana had made him the king of her small, precious world. And she had been right. He had never, for even one nanosecond, forgotten the warmth of her love that had taught his dead heart how to beat. To this day, even though he hated it, he still strove to be the man she'd seen him as. Yeah, he understood exactly the brutal, cold hatred the first Malachi had borne for his mother over the death of his wife and child. It was the same hatred he bore for his own father, who had ignored his pleas to spare Liliana's life, to take his life in exchange for hers. How could you, you worthless bastard, when you knew full well that she was all I had? His nostrils flared as more anger filled him. Stop, Malthus. Don't think about it. There was nothing he could do to change the past. It was the future he needed to focus on. That was the only thing he could alter. Whoever was killing the Malachi was an evil force to be feared, and if they could kill Adarian while he was in a place where nothing other than Nick should be able to weaken him, then they would be able to control Nick, too. That was truly chilling. While Caleb might not like this world he was forced to live in, he knew how much worse it would be in the hands of something that powerful. And he would not dishonor his wife's memory by putting his hands in his pockets and turning away from the battle to come. Not when he knew how to fight and how to win. This wasn't about following the orders he'd been given. It wasn't about saving his own worthless existence. He was already in hell. It was about doing what was right. Fighting for those who couldn't fight for themselves. Adarian was lost to his hatred, and there was nothing Caleb could do to salvage him. But Nick? Hope is that tiny light that the gods have given us so that we can find our way through our darkest hours. And while we might stub our toes and bruise our knees, if we keep moving forward, even when our progress is slow and painful, we will overcome and be made better by our journey. No misery or bad situation is ever infinite or final until we make a conscious decision for it to be so. Caleb had scoffed at Liliana's naive idealism. So basically what you're telling me, little one, is that hope is a human's way of flipping off the gods and saying, ha ha, you lose, and I have no intention of quitting. Take it from someone with a lot of personal experience, they tend to react badly when you do that. But in the end, he had surrendered his battle flag to his wife, mostly because she'd kissed him until he'd lost the ability to form any rational thought. At least, that was the lie he told himself to keep from admitting that in spite of all the horrors he'd seen and utter agony he'd survived, he still had hope inside his heart. Whether it originated as more torture or as divine inspiration, something always happened to carry him forward through every dismal ordeal. And while he might not win this latest fight, he would go down battling the whole way with everything he had. Not for himself or for his own vainglory. Not because he'd been ordered to do it. He would stand strong and fight to the bitter end for the simple reason that it was the right thing to do. Yeah, even he admitted it was stupid. Caleb glanced back at the building where he left Adarian and let out a bitter laugh. We are so going to die. Chapter 12. With the barrel aimed right between Alan's eyes, Nick pulled the trigger and felt the recoil in his hand. A mere instant before the bullet left the chamber, something hard slammed into his wrist, knocking the gun free and sparing Alan's putrid life. The gun landed a moment later with a solid thud on the concrete. His fury exploding, Nick turned on his new attacker, intending to kill them. But just as his hand flew back for a punch, warm, soft hands cupped his cheeks, and then a pair of tender lips touched his. The shock of being so unexpectedly kissed drove all the demon and anger out of him. A sweet, feminine essence filled his nostrils, making his head spin as he breathed her in. It was neither Cody nor Casey he tasted. And the kiss she gave him was so hot that it awoke every male hormone in his body. Growling deep in his throat, Nick lost himself to the wonderful sensation. Until someone hit him on the shoulder, hard. His anger renewed, he turned with a curse to find Casey glaring at him. The stern expression on her face told him she wanted to carve his heart into pieces.
"What do you think you're doing?"
Shocked and confused, Nick glanced back to the woman in his arms. The instant he saw who it was, his stomach hit the ground. No, it couldn't be.
"See me?"
So mailed. With a tender smile, Simi moved in to kiss him again. Nick jumped back 3 feet. The one thing that his future self had all but beat into him was that he had to stay away from Simi. She was to be kept off his menu for all eternity, no matter what. Simi passed a hungry look over him.
"You know, Akri Nick, you taste good even without barbecue sauce."
Oh, someone shoot me. From the look on Casey's face, he would say she was about to. But before she had the chance, another gunshot rang out. Simi tackled Nick to the ground, filling his arms with her warm curves again. Yeah, this was nice, but he rolled with Simi to see Alan on his feet, aiming the gun for another shot. Reacting on pure instinct, Nick conjured a fireball and shot it at Alan. It caught his arm and engulfed it in flames. Alan went down screaming while Nick jerked his head toward Casey, who hadn't made a single sound since the gun had gone off. She lay on the ground a few feet from him in a crumpled heap, unmoving. No. Sirens filled the air as the police finally came toward them. Nick paid no attention as he headed for Casey to see if she was still alive.
"Simi, make sure he doesn't get that gun again."
Her eyes lighting with joy, Simi licked her lips.
"Can the Simi eat his arm? You already toasted it. It's just waiting for dinner time."
"No, Simi, don't." She made a sound of utter irritation as she picked up the gun and glared at Alan.
"You are so related to Akri. No, Simi, no. That's all I hear. You know, bon appetit is a perfectly good phrase, too, and it's one that makes the Simi a lot happier than no, Simi, don't."
He ignored her irritated monologue and Alan's cries of pain as he rushed to Casey's side.
"Please, don't be dead."
He'd never forgive himself if he'd let her die because he was stupid and hormonal. He skimmed her body, but didn't see any blood.
"Casey?"
he breathed as the police descended on the parking lot, filling the darkening sky with bright, flashing lights. She didn't respond at all as car doors opened.
"Freeze!"
someone shouted.
"Put down that gun!"
Nick glanced over to see Simi holding it on Alan, whose arm was now smoldering instead of blazing. Panic made him sick to his stomach as he feared what the demon might do to the police.
"Simi, drop it fast and hold your hands up so they can see that you're not armed."
Not that it mattered. She was actually 100 times more lethal without weaponry than a battalion at full arsenal. Luckily, Simi obeyed him. Still kneeling beside Casey, Nick lifted his arms and laced his fingers behind his head so that some nervous rookie didn't accidentally shoot him.
"We need an ambulance, please?"
The police swarmed them.
"What happened?"
a female officer asked as she squatted beside Nick.
"We were walking to the Hard Rock for dinner when he and another guy pulled guns on us."
He pointed to Alan, who was telling another officer that Nick had jumped him after he asked Casey for her name.
Not knowing we were being mugged, my friend Simi showed up and startled him. The other guy ran away while I fought that one for the gun and it went off. I dropped it, he picked it up and fired. I think he shot my girlfriend, but I can't tell. Please get her help. Don't worry, an ambulance is on the way.
Nick nodded as a male officer came up and jerked him to his feet.
What are you doing?
He says you attacked him for no reason and that he was protecting himself from a homicidal lunatic. Since he's the one bleeding the worst and your girlfriend was holding an unregistered gun on him when we arrived, we'll take you all down to the station until we get this sorted out.
He mugged us, Nick growled, indignant that Alan might skate free after all.
It didn't matter what he said. The cop slammed a handcuff down hard on his wrist and jerked his arm behind his back to lock it to his other hand. He yanked Nick to his feet so hard, Nick was amazed it didn't tear his arm out of his socket.
He's crazy!
Alan shouted as the cop dragged Nick toward the parked police cars, where a long, curious crowd had formed.
Don't get him near me! He's on drugs or something! I never seen nobody act that way! He even set me on fire!
Nick had to bite his tongue to keep from saying Alan deserved it. As they reached one of the cars, a deep voice rumbled next to them.
Hey, Lenny. What's going on?
Thank God it was Asheron. The cop paused next to Ash, who, courtesy of his black biker boots, was almost 7 feet tall.
I don't know, Ash. We got a call about multiple gunshots, and now we got this guy.
He jerked Nick's cuffed hands, claiming to be mugged, and that one over there saying this one attacked him for no reason. Ash shook his head, then leaned down to speak in a low tone.
You know you're arresting Kerrion Squire, right?
The cop paled instantly.
He's one of us?
Ash nodded.
Fully inducted into the Sacred Council.
Son of a... No. I had no idea.
I have my squire's card in my wallet, Nick said over his shoulder. It's on the ground, back there where I dropped it while trying to hand it over before he shot at us. First.
Kyrian's been training him to protect himself from our natural enemies.
Ash jerked his chin toward Alan.
Looks like Nick's been a good student.
Yeah, I'll say he beat the crap out of him. What was I supposed to do? He threatened to rape my date and kill me.
The cop reached down and unlocked the cuffs.
Sorry about that, but you have to appreciate what we saw when we got here.
Turning to face him, Nick curled his lip.
Yeah, I know what you think you saw. Cajun trash.
The cop looked away, shamefaced. Ash folded his arms over his chest.
You okay, kid?
Nick didn't answer, as he saw the paramedics pushing Casey's stretcher toward the ambulance that was parked a few feet from them. He ran over to see how she was doing. She was conscious, and they had an oxygen mask over her face.
Casey?
She reached for him.
Nick, are you okay? Yeah, you?
She nodded.
We're just taking her in as a precaution,
the EMT explained as they stopped to open the back doors. Casey squeezed his hand.
Can you get my car home for me?
You sure you don't want your dad to get it?
I'm sure my keys are in my bag.
Don't worry, I'll take care of it. You just get better.
She smiled at him as the EMT broke their hands apart. They lifted the stretcher and slid her inside. Nick didn't move as they shut the doors and took off with her. Ash came up and put a comforting hand on his shoulder.
So, what really happened?
I don't know what you mean.
Ash arched a bitterly amused brow.
I'm an 11,000-year-old warrior, Nick. I can tell the difference between someone fighting back to protect himself and when someone beats the crap out of someone he has a personal grudge against. What'd he do to you?
He's the one who shot me the night I met Kyrian.
And you didn't kill him?
Nick shrugged.
Police got here first, and they looked a little trigger-happy.
Asheron nodded as he dropped his hand.
Good call.
All of a sudden, his phone started ringing.
Excuse me.
Ash pulled it out and moved away to answer it. Nick left him to check on Simi, but there was no sign of her. He walked over to the woman officer who'd been so nice before Lenny roughed him up.
Where's my friend?
They just took her off in the ambulance.
Not Casey Simi.
Who? Was the woman blind? Simi was a hard creature to miss. The tall... goth girl who was here a minute ago? She screwed up her face.
I didn't see her. Hey, Tim, was there another girl here?
No, why?
Nick opened his mouth to respond, then snapped it shut. Now, to most people, it would be weird for no one to remember seeing a 6-foot-tall Simi holding a gun on Alan. For him, business as usual. Simi had some impressive psychic powers, and obviously amnesia for others was one of them. Man, to have those awesome Jedi mind tricks. That and the force choke. Two things every teenage boy could use to make his life a lot easier. Wishing for what couldn't be, he walked over to the officer, who was bagging Casey's purse and his wallet. Can I have my stuff back? The officer hesitated before handing his wallet over, but he kept the purse. Really? Nick sighed as he braced himself for a fight. Her car's over at Canal Place. She wanted me to get it home for her. Kinda hard if I don't have her keys? He screwed his face up in doubt.
Give the kid the keys, Leo.
You sure? He asked Lenny, who was heading over to the woman officer.
Yeah, but I'll take her back to her at the hospital.
Nick rolled his eyes. What, you think I'm gonna steal it?
It's just protocol.
Lenny handed him the car keys, then moved away. Still irritated, Nick went back to where he'd left Asheron, who was just finishing his call. Can I ask a favor? Ash slid his phone into his back pocket.
Sure.
Casey wanted me to take her car home, and since I don't have my license yet?
Your mom's still holding that card over your head, huh?
Nick made a sound of profound disgust.
Yeah.
She says I don't have enough time behind the wheel. Whatever, I guess.
Your mom loves you, Nick.
I know, Ash. I really do, but there's a difference between love and ownership and suffocation, you know?
Better than most,
he mumbled under his breath. There was so much sincere sympathy and anger in his tone that it made Nick pause. Your mom, too? Asheron laughed, flashing a tiny bit of fang.
No. My parents weren't around when I was a kid. I was raised by strangers.
Those words startled him. Ash rarely spoke about his past to anyone. What was that like? Ash shrugged.
It was like being raised by strangers. People who don't care what happens to you and who never have your best interests at heart. Mostly was really lonely.
Yeah, he supposed it was. So, you never saw your parents at all?
No.
Did they die? Ash snorted.
It's a long story, Nick. And not a happy one, which is why I try not to talk about it. And it's why I have a hard time whenever you bitch about a smothering mother I'd have sold my soul to grow up with. I know Charisse is hard on you at times, but there's a difference between someone who's genuinely worried about you and your future and someone who's punishing you for their own interests and perverse pleasure. Trust me.
He'd never thought of it that way. I'm sorry, Ash.
Don't be. No matter how bad you think your life is, there's always someone out there with a story to make yours look grand in comparison. At least the people who were cruel to me weren't really family. In my opinion, it would have been a lot worse if they had been the people who were supposed to love and protect me from harm.
Nick nodded. Sometimes, Ash, you irritate me, but honestly, I really appreciate the way you put things in perspective. It helps, you know?
That's the one good thing about living so long. It definitely gives you time to reflect and see things you miss when you're being assaulted with problems and are trying to get through a very finite lifespan.
Ash stepped back.
So where's her car?
Canal Place. Ash fell in beside him as they walked over to the parking lot where he and Casey had left the car. This was not the way this was supposed to turn out, Nick said as he unlocked the car doors.
That's true of most days. So, are you driving or me?
Nick laughed. I've had enough excitement for one day, Ash. I don't think my heart could handle a trip through evening traffic with you behind the wheel. Grinning, Ash folded himself into the car while Nick got in and started it. As he drove toward Casey's house, the day's events kept replaying in his head. But the one thing that he fixated on was how close he'd come to really killing Alan and Tyree. Yeah, he'd killed zombies, but they weren't living people. And he'd banished demons, but what's it like, Ash?
What's what like?
Nick swallowed hard. as he forced himself to ask what he needed to have an answer to.
Killing someone.
Acheron hesitated, as if reliving something brutal in his own past.
It sucks. For both of you. Especially the first time.
He paused for a second before he continued.
Savitar has a saying.
Nick had never met Savitar, but from the way Acheron talked about him, he assumed the ancient being had been some kind of mentor to Ash over the centuries, and an extremely powerful one at that.
When you first take someone's life, two people die. Person you just killed, and the human being you used to be. You're never the same after that. It changes you forever, and not in a good way. And no matter how hard you try, you can't go back to the innocence you had. Ever.
Nick turned left as he considered that. So, who was your first?
My brother.
Nick gasped at that most unexpected answer. Ash? Fratricide? Had he heard that correctly? Surely not. Ash was a good guy. He would never take his own brother's life, would he?
No.
Not unless there was a really good reason for it. What was that? He glanced over to Ash, whose face was completely stoic. Why? How? Was it an accident? Ash let out a long, tired sigh.
Not an accident at all. Purely and ruthlessly meditated. I stabbed him while he was asleep in his bed.
That hit Nick like a punch to his breadbasket. How old were you?
Not much older than you are. Just a baby with a bad temper.
Chills ran over him at the harshness of killing someone while he slept. Man, that was cold. And it was so out of Acheron's character. Why would you do something like that? Ash made a bitter sound before he answered.
You wouldn't believe me if I told you. Luckily, even though he died, they brought him back. But it didn't matter. What I did was inexcusable. And in my heart, I knew I had killed my own brother. For what was basically my own selfish reasons and jealousy, that I had looked right into his eyes when he awoke in pain, and I saw the shock, fear, and horror he felt as his life drained out of him and his warm blood covered my hand. I can still feel it sometimes, along with the shame and disgust I had, as I realized I wasn't the person I thought myself to be. In that one awful moment, I saw myself for what I really was. A heartless animal who deserved nothing but hatred. The reasons didn't matter, they still don't. And death, even when necessary and justified, will haunt you forever.
Nick tried to imagine the emotions Ash was talking about, but really, he couldn't. And honestly, he was grateful for that mercy. There were some experiences no one needed to have. What about the daemons you kill? They were the demons who stole human souls to elongate their lives. If a Dark Hunter didn't find and kill the daemon, the stolen human soul would die and be lost forever, giving their victim eternal torment. The only way to save the human soul was to kill the daemon before they totally devoured it. Surely you don't care about killing them.
Nick, they are still living, breathing people, and they don't deserve the curse Apollo gave them over something their ancient ancestors did. They have families and friends they love who love them back. People who will be torn apart by grief when they're gone. Every sentient creature has plans and hopes for their future, and every one of them will look at you with terror in their eyes as they realize that the life they cherished is over, and that they will never again see the people they love. It doesn't matter how warranted their death is, you will still feel like shit afterwards and wonder what kind of monster you are for doing what you did.
Ash ground his teeth.
Whatever deserved hatred or indignation you hold toward them, or the heady rush of adrenaline that comes when it's self-defense and you have no choice, it will wither beneath the tsunami of your guilt and self-loathing. In time, if you're lucky, you will make peace with your actions. And while you're awake, you might even convince your conscience that your actions saved others and were completely justified and sanctioned. but at night, when you're asleep, or any time your unguarded thoughts travel without you, you will be haunted by their eyes and faces, and by the knowledge that your life was bought at the expense of theirs. And that, little brother, will eat at you forever.
Is that why Kieran seldom sleeps?
It's why none of us sleep for very long.
Nick gripped the wheel as he tried to come to terms with everything he learned and everything that had happened tonight. But what disturbed him was the fear that he wouldn't always have the same humanity Asheron spoke of once the Malachi took him over. He just couldn't see his heartless father being haunted by anything. Do you think that's true of demons, too? Of the demons who kill humans?
I know it's true, Nick. And while there are rare exceptions of barbaric creatures who are truly without conscience or compassion, most are not.
But what if you're born broken? What if your genes are so tainted that you have no choice except to be a killer?
Ash shook his head wearily.
You have got to quit fixating on this, Nick. We all have a choice, believe me. I was born out of the darkest corner of hell, and inside me lives a vengeful beast that wants to lash out and destroy everything it touches without hesitation or prejudice.
That news floored him. Was it true? But you're always so calm and relaxed.
I've learned to hide it well. But that doesn't mean that it's not there, just below the calm surface, salivating for the nearest jugular. You are not your father, little brother. You will never be like him.
If only he could make Ash's conviction his own. You're the only one who thinks that.
It doesn't matter what other people think. The only opinion that really matters is yours. We are all the writers of our lives. We can make our stories comedies or tragedies, tales of horror or of inspiration. Your attitude and your fortitude and courage are what determine your destiny, Nick. Life is hard, and it sucks for all. Every person you meet is waging his or her own war against a callous universe that is plotting against them. And we are all battle-weary. But in the midst of our hell, there is always something we can hold on to, whether it's a dream of the future, or a memory of the past, or a warm hand that soothes us. We just have to take a moment during the fight and remember that we're not alone, and that we're not just fighting for ourselves. We're fighting for the people we love.
Do you really believe that?
Ash laughed bitterly.
Most of the time. But admittedly, there are many other times when I think I'm as full of bullshit as you do.
Nick grinned, even though he hated the way Asheron could see into his thoughts. I appreciate the honesty.
Anytime.
He paused as he let Ash's words play through his thoughts for a minute. But for better or worse, he kept coming back to one basic fear. Ash, do you know what keeps me up at night?
At your age, I'd imagine thoughts of scantily clad women.
Nick snorted. How very stereotypical of you.
Hey, I was your age once, and I've known a lot more of us over the centuries. But honestly, I do know what you're thinking. And I know what you hide from others. Deep inside, in places we don't want to admit to owning. Those of us who have sperm donors instead of fathers wish that once, just once, they would look at us like a father is supposed to look at his kid. That they would be proud to call us their children. And alongside that bitter desire, we hate ourselves for feeling that we're gonna be just like them one day, and that our children will hate us the way we hate them.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to be my father.
You don't have to be. There's a scene in the Iliad that...
What?
I weep at the modern educational system,
Ash said under his breath. Then louder,
it's a story written by a man named Homer about the Trojan War.
Oh, I know that. Ash inclined his head to him.
There's a scene in the Iliad when Hector is about to leave for battle, and he's talking to his wife, Andromache, and he reaches for their son, Scamandrius, who recoils from him because he doesn't recognize his father while Hector is dressed in his armor. Hector laughs, then removes his helm and puts it on the ground so that Scamandrius can see his face. Then he soothes his son and prays aloud for him. Zeus, all you other gods, grant that this child, my son, may become, like me, preeminent among the Trojans, as strong and brave as me. Grant that he may rule Troy with strength. May people someday say, as he returns from war, this man is far better than his father. That, Nick, is what everyone should strive for. Not to be the same as our sperm donors, but better. Your father has shown you what you don't want to be. Now it's up to you to take the lessons he's taught you and use them to do better. We should all try to leave the world a better place than what we found when we got here.
Nick fell silent at those words for several minutes. That was what he wanted. When he died, he didn't want the world to be glad to have him out of it. Is that what happened with you?
That is for the world to decide. But I can tell you this. I try, and I do my best every day. In the end, that's all we can do.
Nick considered that for the rest of the way as he navigated traffic. He parked the car in front of Casey's house. There wasn't a light on inside the sprawling mansion at all. It looked completely deserted.
Do you think her parents have been notified?
Ash went still as if he were listening to the ether. After a few seconds, he nodded.
They're on their way to her.
Good. He knew firsthand how awful it was to be alone in a hospital. No one should be stuck like that. Getting out of the car, he locked the door, then retrieved his stuff from the trunk. Nick hesitated.
Where do you think I should put the keys?
Under the mat on the front porch. You can text her and let her know where they are.
You're brilliant.
Ash broke out with a cocky grin.
I know.
Laughing, Nick did what he said. He was on his way back to the street when a weird wave went through him. He thought he'd imagined it until he saw the way Ash stood on the pathway, tense and alert, completely still.
You felt that, didn't you?
Nick whispered. Ash gave a subtle nod.
What is it?
I'm not sure.
Ash moved closer to Nick as if to protect him.
And honestly, Nick, that's what concerns me. It's not often I don't have an answer. You should have killed him.
Those echoing words came like a subtle breeze that was so light, Nick wasn't sure it was real.
You have to take your place.
Do you hear that?
He asked Ash.
Hear what?
The air around them went perfectly still, like standing in the eye of a hurricane. Before Nick could react, Asheron used his powers to teleport them from Casey's house into Nick's bedroom in his condo. The quickness of it disoriented Nick to the point that he thought he'd hurl. Choking on bile, he forced his stomach to back down.
Next time, warn a brother before you snatch him around, Ash. That stuff's harsh, and I'd hate to barf on your expensive boots.
Yeah, and I'd hate to have to kill you for it, too.
Nick started to respond until he looked up and realized that for once, Asheron wasn't wearing his opaque sunglasses. He was immediately assaulted by two simultaneous and shocking truths about his friend. One, without those sunglasses on, Asheron was absolutely beautiful. His every feature was perfectly sculpted like a major work of art. But what really slapped him hardest was Asheron's eyes. There was nothing human about them. They swirled with a deep, glowing silver, like mercury in a centrifuge. Nick had never seen or heard of anything like them. Those weren't the black, light-sensitive eyes of a dark hunter. They were the eyes of something far more powerful and ancient.
Dude, Nick breathed, what's the deal with your eyes?
The sunglasses returned immediately to cover them.
Sorry about that. You okay?
No, he wasn't.
What are you, Ash? Really?
The last of my kind on this earth. You know that.
Yeah, but Did all Atlanteans have eyes like yours?
No.
Why do they swirl?
A tick started in Ash's jaw, letting him know that Ash was extremely self-conscious about them, which must be why he always kept them covered, no matter how dark it was.
Why are your eyes blue, Nick? Bad genetics. Your eyes are as much an anomaly as mine. Just more people happen to share your mutation.
Suddenly he felt bad for saying anything. I'm sorry, Ash. If you want the truth, though, I think they're cool as all get out. Can I see him again?
I'm not a specimen in a museum hung on a wall for your amusement.
I didn't mean it that way. Ash held his hand up in irritation.
I know, Nick. I do. But I've taken a lot of grief over them through the centuries. You've no idea. And it is a serious hot button for me.
And Ash wasn't as calm as he appeared. Nick made a mental note of what he'd said in the car about his temper. Whatever he did, he didn't want to push Ash over the edge.
I still think they're awesome.
That's because you haven't had to deal with the negative aspects of a deformity people have never understood.
In that moment, Nick had an epiphany of what Ash's childhood must have been like. Ancient societies had been even less tolerant of people who were different than modern-day high schools. And for whatever reason, Ash had been raised without his parents to protect him. Oh yeah. His past, S-U-C-K-E-D.
Did your brother have eyes like you?
Ash shook his head.
His eyes were the same color as yours. It was how people told us apart at a glance.
Oh yeah, that's right. Ash had told him that he was a twin, but Nick had forgotten that. Is that why you hated him?
No. And I'll let you in on a secret. I never really hated my brother. I hated myself. And I took that out on him, and I blamed him for things that weren't his fault any more than they were mine. When you're in that kind of extreme mental anguish and absolute agony that you can't escape no matter what you try, you turn your hatred outward. Because it's a lot easier to focus your hatred on someone you don't have to look at in the mirror. And my brother was just an easy person to blame since he was everything I wanted to be. Respected, intelligent, skilled, a natural leader. And I couldn't stand that I walked in his shadow as a lesser being.
Nick scowled. You tell me these things and I just can't wrap my head around them. You're Asheron Parthenopaeus, the baddest of asses. The feared and beloved leader of an army of immortal protectors. You're wealthy beyond dreams, and you have the most epic powers of anyone I've ever heard of. I'd kill to have one-tenth of your looks and build. How could you ever look at yourself and find a flaw? Seriously.
Because I'm not the same person now that I was when I was human. I've changed in ways you can't begin to imagine, and in the end, what I've learned is that childhood is what you spend your entire adulthood trying to get over. And when it's a bad one, no amount of success or wealth will ease the vicious, hating voices that linger long after your tormentors are dead and buried. You carry that hate with you everywhere you go. It's why I keep telling you not to listen to the ones who attack you. Don't get that never-ending soundtrack started. It's the most self-destructive thing you can do to yourself.
Those heartfelt words withered something inside Nick, but not in a bad way. They reached him in a way nothing else ever had before. Ash?
Yeah?
Nick cleared his throat. Do not, and I mean do not, take this the wrong way, okay? He wrapped his arms around Ash and hugged him.
I will always be your brother.
He whispered in Ash's ear.
And I won't ever hate you.
Only then did Ash hug him back. And it was awkward enough to let him know that Ash had neither given nor received many hugs in his extremely long life.
You're such a strange kid, Nick.
Laughing, Nick released him.
So everyone tells me. But I like being strange and different.
Most days, anyway. Ash gave him a sad smile.
You have a great heart. Don't ever let life change that.
I don't plan to.
But even as he spoke those words,
Nick had a bad feeling that his change wasn't ultimately in his hands, that fate would move forward whether he wanted it to or not. Ambrose had tried and tried to keep him from morphing into the Malachi. Each time, he'd failed. According to his future self, this was their last shot to save all of them. No more do-overs. If Nick screwed up again, his mom, Bubba, Caleb, Kieran, and everyone he held dear would die. He and Ash could become bitter enemies. And Nick would destroy the entire world and everyone in it. That thought had barely finished before he heard a blood-chilling scream echo from the living room. Chapter 13.
Nick!
That scream shredded Nick's nervous system like an electrical torture device as he ran from his bedroom to the living room with Ash one step behind him. From the shrill tone and raw panic in it, he was expecting to find blood on the walls and at least 10 or 12 dozen armed men attacking his mother. So the sight of her wailing alone in the living room brought him to a stop so sudden Ash collided with him. Terrified he'd missed something in his haste, he turned around frantically, trying to find the demons or whatever had her so torn up. But they were the only ones in the room. Without warning, she grabbed him into the tightest hug he'd ever had. Dang, for a tiny woman, she was strong. Ma, you're killing me, I can't breathe. Instead of her loosening her hold, she tightened it more as she cried against his chest. He looked helplessly at Asheron. To his credit, Ash didn't react at all to his mother's insane hysteria. With a nonchalance Nick envied, Ash tucked his hands into his jacket pockets.
Call me crazy, but I'm assuming by all of this that she heard about your little incident tonight.
Stepping back, she cupped Nick's face in her hands and turned his head from side to side to inspect it.
You heard it all, baby?
I think you might have bruised a rib or two just now. She rolled her eyes irritably.
Not from me, boy. When that animal attacked you, did he hurt you?
No, I'm all right. She glared at the blood on his clothes.
Who was bleeding?
Not me. Promise.
Much, anyway.
Only then did she release him and go to Asheron. She grabbed him in an equally fierce hug, even though she barely came up to his waist.
Thank you so much for seeing my baby home and staying with him until I got here.
Wow. Ash looked even more uncomfortable and uncertain with Nick's mom holding him than he'd been when Nick hugged him a few minutes ago. That man really wasn't used to open affection. He reminded Nick of a puppy being held by a small child. While he tolerated it, it was obvious he'd rather be getting a root canal or colonoscopy. With a ragged breath, she let go of Ash and turned back to Nick, who stepped away before she seized him again in that tight anaconda grip.
That's it, she snapped. Tomorrow, you're getting your license, and I won't hear any argument from you about it. I'm not having you walk anywhere else ever again. From now on, you drive my car anywhere you need to go, and that includes school, you hear me?
Was she nuts? It would take him twice as long to drive to school, and then he'd most likely have to park even farther away than what their condo was.
Ma, it's just around the corner. I don't care. It's not worth the chance.
She broke down into more tears. Cringing, but knowing he had to do something to calm her down, Nick forced himself into her anacondic hug range and held her against him so she could squeeze all the blood to his head. He looked helplessly at Asheron.
Ash shrugged. Don't cut those pernicious eyes at me, kid. Kieran's the one who had the mom and all the sisters. Maybe he can tell you what to do for her. I'm clueless.
Oh, stop, both of you.
His mom stepped back and pressed her hands against her face as she finally calmed down.
I'm well aware of the fact that I'm a basket case, okay? I can't help it. Neither of you has any idea what it does to a parent to find out something bad happened to your baby when you weren't there to help them. It's like the universe sucks all the air out of your lungs and you can't breathe again until you see for yourself that they're okay. It's an unimaginable hell.
I'm not saying anything, Mrs. Gauchet. I have no problem with your mothering at all. More power to you.
Nick held his hands up in surrender. Stupid ain't on my forehead, and I don't want to get grounded. Cry all you want, Mom, anytime. She let out a sound of supreme irritation and then scowled at Nick's new clothes.
What are you wearing?
Nick looked down as a bad feeling went through him. With all the crap that had happened, he'd completely forgotten to change.
I am screwed.
Clothes? He said hesitantly. Not his smoothest comeback. It was like throwing a grenade in a nitroglycerin factory.
Whose clothes?
Mine.
And where did you get them?
Store? She hissed in anger, making his stomach shrink tight in Pavlovian expectation of her overreaction.
Nick, you look like some low-life hoodlum up to no good and out to get into trouble. Good boys don't wear solid black on the street. For that matter, why don't you just grow your hair down your back and pierce your ears and other body parts so that everyone will think you're nothing but no-account trash with no one who cares about you?
Horrified by her tirade, Nick cut his eyes to Asheron, who was swathed in black from head to toe and whose hair fell to the center of his back, not to mention the earring in his left lobe and the small stud in his right nostril. Ash was the poster boy of what his mom had just condemned. His mom's entire face flamed as she realized what she'd inadvertently said and implied about his friend. She turned to face him.
I didn't mean it that way, Ash.
Ash gave her a kind smile.
No offense taken, Mrs. Gaucher. I've been called a lot worse, and that was just a couple hours ago.
Still, his mother was mortified by her insensitive comments.
I have never, ever thought that about you. I know you're a good man, and I did not mean to imply otherwise.
Really? It's fine. I'm not offended in the least,
he reiterated.
I dress like I do because I want people to leave me alone and cross the street when they see me coming. Everything you said to Nick about other people's perceptions is correct, and I back you 100%.
It was still thoughtless and cruel, and I would never hurt you that way, Ash.
I know.
Her features sad, she reached up and pulled Ash's face down to hers, then kissed his cheek.
I think the world of you. And I'm glad you're Nick's friend.
Thank you. And on that note, I'm gonna make myself scarce so that you can finish reaming your son without worrying about feelings I don't have.
He grinned at her, then looked over to Nick.
I'll see you tomorrow, Slick. Try not to get in any more trouble between now and then.
Later. His mom didn't speak until after Ash was gone. Then she turned on him with a look that made him want to hold a crucifix up in front of his face to banish the evil coming toward him.
Now explain those clothes, boy. And what's this I heard at work from Alex Peltier about you joining a band? A band, Nicky? Really?
He shrugged.
It's harmless, Mom. I thought I'd try something new. Then try taking out the trash without me having to nag you for it. Make up my bed for me in the morning. Scrub out the tub and lower the toilet seat. I can think of 1,000 things new you can do that would make me want to spank you even though you dwarf me.
Mom, come on. I don't mean to be rude, but you're really overreacting to this. You know Alex and his entire family. He's as clean-cut and upstanding as they come. I'm just playing the drums for him. It's no big deal. As for my clothes, I hate those tacky used Hawaiian shirts, and I've told you that for years. Ash, Caleb, and Kieran, and Dev, and dozens of other people wear black all the time. No one thinks anything about it, really.
She narrowed her gaze on him.
I want better for you, boo. I spent my entire youth with people looking down on me and calling me trash.
I was there with you for it, Mom. I heard them too, and I know exactly how you felt. And I promise you that those god-awful shirts you forced me to wear have not spared me the wrath or insults of my fellow morons. If I have to be insulted, please, let me do it in Dolce & Gabbana, real suede loafers rather than backyard tacky wear.
Biting her lip, she nodded. Okay, you're right. You're 16 and you have your own job that pays good money you work hard for. As much as I hate it, you are a man and not my little baby boy Boo anymore.
She broke off into a small sob. He pulled her into his arms and held her tight.
It's okay. I'm still your baby boy Boo, but
I don't want the rest of the world calling me that. Just you.
She laughed and squeezed him tight.
We're a pair, aren't we? Two peas, you and me.
As snug as bugs in a rug, he said, quoting one of her favorite sayings from his childhood. Any time he'd been sick or he'd felt bad about something, she'd scooped him into her lap and whispered that to him while she made him feel better. God, he loved his mom so much. She sank her hand in his hair, then let go.
Have you eaten anything?
No, ma'am. I was on my way for food when... He stopped as he realized what he was about to say. The last thing he wanted to do was start her crying again. To his relief, she held it together.
I'll go warm up something good for you. Thanks, Mom. I'll be there in a second. First, I'm gonna change into something without bloodstains.
She growled at him.
You're not funny.
Without commenting on that, he returned to his room to find Caleb standing just inside his closed window. Sucking his breath in sharply, he quickly shut the door before his mom caught a glimpse of their home invader and had another hissy.
What are you doing here, see?
Checking on you.
Nick scowled. Surely Caleb didn't know about the mugging.
Did he?
Why?
Caleb pushed himself away from the window and went to Nick's desk. He pulled out the chair and straddled it.
Something weird is happening. Your father's dying.
Well, he didn't have a lot of feelings for his dad. That news shocked him.
What?
Caleb nodded slowly.
He's in bad shape.
Are you the one killing him?
No,
he said emphatically.
What kind of fool question is that? Why would you let that thought even enter your head? Jeez.
Caleb leaned forward to prop his arms across the back of the chair.
Because the only thing I know that can kill him is you.
He paused and then frowned as he noted Nick's rumpled clothes.
Why are you covered in blood?
Real swift on the uptake there, Sparky. Glad I wasn't hemorrhaging on the floor needing help. With those keen powers of observation you possess, I'd have died 10 minutes ago.
Caleb snorted.